Thanks for joining us here on This Week in Iowa. I'm Sabrina Ahmed. Des Moines' mayoral race is headed to a runoff between incumbent Frank County and challenger Jack Hatch. Neither County nor Hatch were able to reach a total of 50% plus one vote Tuesday night. Last Tuesday, that is, County and Hatch with 43.28 and 42.67% respectively. Also on the ballot, Chase Holm got about 8%, Joe Grandinette about 5% of the votes, but neither of those two candidates will be included in the runoff. So last week we sat down with incumbent Mayor County, and this week we are sitting down with his challenger, Jack Hatch. Good. Mr. Hatch, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be here.
Tell me your reaction to election night.
Well, we were very surprised and very humbled. Maybe surprised, we know everybody was surprised. To take on an incumbent mayor, 16 years, you really had to have some compelling reasons. We felt we had those reasons. We came together with a plan about water, water quality, water management. We talked about getting a better coordination with the schools. We talked about revitalization of our neighborhoods, not just downtown. We talked about the urgent mental health crisis. And so I think people began to see that we had actually a vision and a plan that addressed some of the things that were most close to them. And I think it was reflected in the vote, because being that close, it means that people were listening, and they have been.
Now, I asked Mayor County the same thing, but if you add up the percentage of points that you got plus the percent that Joe Grandinette got and Chase Holm got, Mayor County would have lost by like 58%.
That's correct. I think what that sends is that 58% of the people voted against or voted for somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's not good news for the mayor, and I think he knows that. However, we still have to prove to the voters that we have that ability to put something in front of them that they would like.
But there's a lot more, it's a lot more difficult to get people to go to the polls for a runoff election than it is when you have city council and the school board and all of these other propositions that are being voted for, that everybody comes for a certain reason and then they just happen to vote for mayor as well if that's not why they're coming. So it's an extra push.
It not only is an extra push, it's the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. I might as well be offering free turkey.
Because they might be turkeyed out by then, to be
fair.
I
think I'd think of anything, you know, popovers or something. But the sense is, it's going to be difficult. And we, you know, we do appreciate you highlighting this, because this is where we make decisions, and this is where the citizenship really has to come forward and participate. We hope they do, and we're going to be pushing some issues. We're going to be pushing the idea of absentee voting, and we're going to be making sure people know that there's an election. So we're going to try to do our best.
So what happens between now and December 3rd for you and your team?
Well, it's we have to raise some more money, so that's mainly my responsibility. We take a look at our field operation. We take a look at our message, what worked and what didn't, what's really what are people interested in, what did they respond to. We are going to be doing contacting the voters through our Facebook feed, through probably commercial advertisements. I mean, everything's going to be the same. It's going to be on steroids.
It's going to be an overdrive. So yeah. Will we see more of those signs in people's yards?
We hope so. Actually, we've got a lot of people have been calling us. And that's one way to show and to remind people that there's a vote coming
it's
up.
It's not over yet.
It's not over yet. And you elect a mayor, and we like to think that we've elevated the mayor to the position to be really part of a bully pulpit, really talking about the issues, even though we may not be able to do something about it. Let's just take education, for example. We have no statutory responsibility for education. But where do young couples, what's one of the reasons young couples choose where to live? The schools. And so we want to be able to support our schools and make sure that they get all the help they can get from the state legislature and from the city, so that we could have the best education possible and people can live in our city and we could be working together. So that's why I called for the superintendent and the board president to be ex officio members of the city council. We both use property tax money. So let's see how we could do it and work it and make it more effective and efficient.
That seems obvious.
It does, but you know, it's 150 years it hasn't been done.
Okay, so what's your message to Iowans as you are gearing up for December 3rd?
Well, I want them to participate. This is your election. This is your mayor. And I'd like to be able to say that we've listening to you and that you're listening to us and that we're working together to get our message so you have something to believe in. That you'll be able to see a future of for your city, for you and your kids, and that you'll ask your children to come back, you'll ask your parents to stay, and that you'll have a place that you could be proud of, not just downtown, but all the neighborhoods.
I might be biased. I live in Des Moines, so I
That's
do
good.
Have to say that Des Moines is a great city to live in. We really appreciate your time.
And you're going to have your two babies.
Twins.
coming to live in
yes,
Des Moines.
Yes, they will also Thank be you. Des Moines, and they will wave the Des Moines flag very proudly.
Terrific.
Thank you for your time.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it. We'll take a short break, everyone. But coming up next, the Senate candidate has a pre-existing condition. His message to Iowa voters. We are joined now by Eddie Morrow, a Senate candidate running against Senator Joni Ernst. And Mr. Morrow, a recent tweet you put out is what caught my eye and why we asked you to come on the show today. And it was this, a photo of you in the hospital. You in your tweet are discussing a pre-existing condition you have. Can you talk to us a little bit about why you decided to post this photo to Twitter, what happened, and where you are now?
So we posted it to remind people that healthcare is very important for us. And I'm running around the state. I'm hearing that quite a bit. And I have a pre-existing condition, a lung condition that was treated. And I was very fortunate to get great care. And I'm out running for the United States Senate because I think everybody in this state, in this country, deserves to get the kind of care that I got. We want to talk about that.
So there was a recent vote on pre-existing conditions, and Senator Ernst voted against it. What was your reaction to that?
Well, she's done it several times. That's why we're running, because Senator Ernst has voted to take away pre-existing conditions as part of people's health care, and that's not acceptable today. And we're running because, you know, people like Senator Ernst has great health insurance, and you and I pay for that health insurance. That's fundamentally unfair, I think. And we're running because that shouldn't take place. Everybody should have access to the same kind of health care that Ms. Ernst has access to.
We hear all this talk nowadays about Medicare for All or some sort of Obamacare or improving it or what people want to keep their insurance. Those are all coming from presidential candidates. But at the end of the day, it's the U.S. Congress that decides. It's the Senate and the House that decide what legislation goes to the president's desk to sign. So what kind of legislation would you like to see coming out of the Senate?
So I like to see a Medicare for everybody that would want it or needs it. And if those that want to choose something else, then more power to them. But at the end of the day, everybody should have the same kind of care that I have, and that's why we're talking about this issue today. And thanks for bringing us on to do that, by the way. But everybody needs to have that kind of care, quality, accessible, and affordable health care, so they have a condition like I have or any other conditions that people have. They get the care they need without going bankrupt, without having to maybe not take the drugs they need to have, or maybe not going at all, which exacerbates problems for people.
So Medicare for all who want it, that's another one of those options that we hear on the trail. How do you pay for it?
Well, you pay for it, the Medicare for all that want it or need it, you're going to pay for through tax initiatives, by finding ways to lower other areas where we're spending money. So we can free up some funds that are being misused. Elizabeth Warren's talking about making sure we get money from those that aren't paying their fair share. And there's a lot of people in our country that aren't paying their fair share. And we want to make sure that everybody's paying their fair share that allow us to cover the expenses of something like that.
So when you hear, a lot of the focus when you look at 2020 is, of course, on this presidential race and the caucus that will happen in February. So how can you kind of, how do you align yourself in who's, are you going to endorse a candidate for president? Do you align yourself with the candidate, someone who you might piggyback off of?
So it's been very fortunate, Sabrina, quite honestly. We're running around the state, and I've been in living rooms with Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. Mm-hmm. I've been in the church with Pete Buttigieg. I've been in community centers and all kinds of other places with many others. And I'm able to see a lot of all of them. And I find things in just about all of them that I like, and I find some things in some of them that I don't necessarily agree with. So I got a smorgasbord of ideas out there, and I'm picking up some that I think fit who I am and would be good for the state of Iowa and for this country, and I'm using some of those, yes.
Okay, so give us a check on the Senate race in general against Joni Ernst. How do you feel like it's going?
I think it's going very well. So we've been running around the state now for several months. Mm-hmm. We're north of 70 counties now and growing. We're talking to rural, urban, suburban Iowans about issues that are important to them, like health care. And they're very concerned about that because there's folks out there that don't have the ability to get the care that I got, or they know they have loved ones that don't get the care that I got. There's people excited about what's going on or interested in what's going on in rural communities, with education, with our climate and environment. There's so much going on out there as far as difficult issues and a lot of energy. And we saw that last Friday at the Liberty and Justice mm-hmm. event, and I'm seeing that everywhere we go as we run around the state.
All right, Mr. Morrow, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks,
Sabrina.
Great to be here.
Thanks for sharing a bit of a personal story in there as well.
My pleasure. Take care.
We'll take a short break, everyone. But coming up next, Tom Steyer's plan for rural America when we come back. Tom Steyer says he has a plan for rural America, but of course it all comes down to how to pay for it. And again, he says we have to fix the inequalities. Take a listen to our conversation.
The basic point is there's a huge rural-urban divide in the United States of America, and that rural America has been cut off in many ways, and as a result, people are suffering. And the question is, how do we, in fact, get back to a prosperous, vibrant, healthy rural America? And that's what this policy aims to do, to reconnect rural America to the rest of America, to try and address the needs of people in rural America and try and give them the tools to get back to a really prosperous place.
So that's the broadband?
That's the first thing, but it's not just broadband. I mean, I think everybody knows that we need high-speed internet transmission for people to be able to be connected to urban America, to that kind of world. But I think, you know, literally roads and bridges, that it's not, you know, connectivity is more than just broadband. It's a much broader point than that. And then there's a question about services. You know, how are we going to make sure that people in rural areas get the kind of health care, the kind of mental health care, the kind of education that they need and deserve? And what are we going to do to make it possible for them to prosper? It's a whole bunch of questions.
Iowa has, for all the bridges that we have, we actually have terrible bridges when you look at them as a whole, because there are so many rural bridges that are deteriorating, and they're not getting fixed by the counties or the cities or whoever is in charge of them. But part of that is because there are so many fewer people who use them and need them, because we have these conglomerate farms and there aren't as many people who are traveling in between. So is it really necessary to have all of those small roads, bridges fixed if we have all of these larger farms that are...
We are going to have to. Look, we're going to have to rebuild America's infrastructure if people are going to be able to live successfully and prosperously in rural America. And that's our goal. So yes, we are going to have to do that. And that's, look, we're going to have to rebuild the infrastructure of the United States of America. We're just going to have to do it on a climate smart basis. You know, my climate plan specifically talks about the need to rebuild infrastructure, but in a way that deals with the climate crisis. And we need to do that all across the country, and we specifically need to do it in rural America.
And how do you do that?
You allocate money to it. You, in fact, get back to the idea that the government actually supports the people of the United States and is not, you know, I would undo, this is a question of focus and resources, and I would, you know, I've said I'd undo these Republican tax cuts for the richest Americans and the biggest corporations. I'd put in a wealth tax. You know, we need, the government needs to provide services to the people of the United States, and the idea that they don't, and that therefore we lead with tax cuts and then continue to cut services, makes no sense in terms of long-term prosperity for anybody, including even the richest Americans.
So what is your message to people who live in rural Iowa as you are continuing your campaign?
My message is we need to make sure that people in rural Iowa, first of all, we need to end the trade war. I would on day one. We really can't use the prosperity of rural America and rural Iowa as a chip in a intellectual property fight with China. That makes no sense. It's completely unfair, and it's failing. Second of all, we need to make sure that the services in rural America are decent for American citizens, that rural America is connected to urban America, both through broadband and physically, so that people can be part of, can, you know, interact and be part of that economy. And we need to make sure that the farm economy is a leader in terms of not just producing food, but also in terms of climate resilience and climate change, and that they get paid for it. Just the way they get paid for the windmills on their farms, we need to have a different, more, you know, a climate smart economy. And farmers are going to be a big part of the solution, and they need to make money off that, and that's going to be part of the new prosperity.
Coming up next, a coalition launched in Iowa to help women thrive. Their plans next. Everyone, we are joined now by Genevieve Dean and Liz Edelman here to talk about the Never Settle Coalition. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining me. To get started, what is the Never Settle Coalition? It's a national movement.
Yes. The Never Settle Coalition is a national movement, which we're starting right here in Iowa. We get to be first in the nation for a lot of things. We get to be first in the nation for launching this movement. And what the movement is, Never Settle, is an organization, a resource, a conversation to inspire women to realize the situations in which they may have settled. Settled for what a parent has expected, what a partner's expected, what an employer has thought they're worth. This organization wants to empower and inspire women to recognize they may have had to settle in situations, but we want to be that resource. We want to be that voice for women to feel empowered that they don't need to settle in some of the decisions they make in life.
And Genevieve, how did this all get started?
So there was a survey to women across the country, and one of the questions was, if you were to tell a young woman, give a young woman a single piece of advice on a 3x5 note card, what would it be? And the answer to that question over and over again was never settle. And that right there just jumped at us as this is obviously something that we need to talk about and we need to get women talking about.
So how do you do it? It sounds like a great idea, never settle. But what are the actions that people can take to get involved and to be a part of this so that they can not only learn, but also share?
So we had our first launch event a few weeks back, which you're a part of.
Yes.
We're so grateful for your support there. So we're kind of in phase one of launching, getting that awareness out. You know, the Never Settle has hired us to kind of be that voice here in Iowa, letting people know what the organization is, just getting that brand awareness out there. At our events, we are encouraging people to sign up on NeverSettleCoalition.com, share their stories. We've found when women share their stories of similar experiences, then you could inspire that next woman. It's kind of the strength in numbers. So first we're saying share your story online, get it out there, share your Never Settle moment online. And then so we hope to have some house parties. We hope to kind of just continue this momentum. We're meeting with women throughout the state, getting that conversation going.
We're really hoping to inspire the settle up moment, where it's when you learn that you didn't have to settle and really succeeded in what you didn't settle for. We sponsored the Women of Influence 20th anniversary event, and at that event, we left 3x5 postcards where women could take it and then write a younger woman a note in which maybe they had settled up and were a success, or maybe settled and regretted it and wouldn't want somebody else to do the same thing.
So this is kind of phase one. What are the next steps? Where can you see this organization going from here?
Well, we're starting in Iowa. The organization hopes to have presence in the states all throughout the country. Starting here, so we can kind of be that resource to our neighbors in Missouri or in Virginia or wherever the next step might be. We will have started it here, and we'll be able to kind of help continue that momentum throughout the country.
We really want people to just keep talking, keep sharing their stories, tag it on social. You can even share your story on social and then visit the website.
And then do you believe that there will be toolkits for people not only sharing stories, but then, you know, how do you go and get that
exactly
raised?
So one of the reasons we keep on saying share your story online, share your story on the website, is we want to put together, see where the common themes are. Where are women settling? Are they settling in the workplace? Are they settling for the division of household labor? Some things that we've come across that we've had to settle. So getting those stories through the website, we can kind of see where those areas are, and we want to offer resources, toolkits, mentorships. Some of the women that have spoken at our events kind of have been this face to say, you know, I had this resource in my life. I'm a woman who's been through something similar. I want to be that for you. So that's what the organization also hopes to be.
Okay, give us that website one more time, Genevieve, so that we can have people share their stories at home as well.
It's NeverSettleCoalition.com.
Thank you. you for listening to the This Week in Iowa podcast. You can find the This Week in Iowa podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so be sure to subscribe now. You can also watch This Week in Iowa every Sunday at 9 a.m. on Local 5. For the latest in Iowa political news, follow This Week in Iowa on Twitter or visit weareiowa.com.